Hi, lovely listeners. It's Rachel, the keto vegan. And in this episode, I'm going to talk about an article I saw this week in a paper with the headline, 2 years to save the world. UN climate chief pleads for funding. I'm also going to talk about how going vegan could save the NHS £6.7 billion a year. And finally, I'm going to talk about how red and processed meat increase the risk of cancer. So let's get started. An article from the National Health Executive, and there's a link below for this, states that veganism could save the NHS £6.7 billion a year if everybody in England converted to a vegan diet, a plant-based diet. Now, they are saying that these savings are due to reducing the amount of major diseases in the UK, including type 2 diabetes and cancer. So, okay, who did the research? This organization, it's a charity actually, it's a registered charity and independent research organization. It's called the Office of Health Economics. It's a registered charity. I think I've said that already. So their finding suggests that if everyone in England converted to a plant-based diet, and I know it's a big ask, and in my lifetime, that's definitely not going to happen. So what would happen? The NHS would save £6.7 billion a year. There would be over 2 million fewer cases of disease across the population. People would benefit from an extra 172,735 quality adjusted life years. That's not each. And a net benefit of around £18.8 billion would be achieved when all those findings are combined. That's phenomenal, isn't it? Research the Vegan Society. So it could be biased. Probably is going to be promoting veganism most definitely. And the Vegan Society say that this money could cover the annual budgets of at least seven hospitals, could also fund annual salaries of 65,000 consultants or 185,000 nurses. Dietary choices impact the NHS and the population's health. They say that for every million people going vegan, the anticipated reduction in illness could save the NHS £121 million. That's for every million people in this country going vegan. £121 million of savings. That's incredible. The NHS are focusing on prevention rather than cure. Always better to do it that way. There's an NHS prevention program. There's a link for that underneath in the show notes. The focus, one of the focuses, is preventing diabetes. And this, they say, this is the condition that will bring about the biggest amount of savings to the NHS. The statement from this article that I read says, in a best case scenario, a vegan diet could help reduce type 2 diabetes cases by 1.2 million, helping the NHS save over £4.5 billion. For cancer, another prevention focus, more than 500,000 cases could be averted, while over £1 billion in savings could be achieved. So that's the article I found from the NHS. Again, the links are below. Another article that I read a while ago when I saw something about anti-aging and gut microbiome health. And at 53, anti-aging is, quite interested in that. The link below is for that as well. It's theartofantiaging.com. Okay, so they were talking about health and what people eat, and they're saying that protein is an essential macronutrient for building and repairing muscle, maintaining bone health, making hormones, and lots more. But they are saying that some studies have found that diets high in animal protein specifically can be harmful for gut health and might even increase the risk of developing inflammatory bowel disease, IBD. So an example of this is that one study compared the gut bacteria of children Italian children who ate a diet higher in animal protein to the gut bacteria of children from Burkina Faso, I think that's how you pronounce it. You know how good I am at pronouncing things, who consumed more plant-based protein and fiber. Now, the research found that the higher animal protein group had more gut bacteria, which was associated with inflammation and disease, whilst plant-based group had higher amounts of gut bacteria associated with the lower inflammation levels. Now, this is, they say, this is a caution against overdoing animal protein and meat as a whole in your diet. And other research, they say, does suggest that red meat might be the worst for gut health, since it appears to raise levels of gut bacteria byproduct that's linked to an increased risk of heart attack and stroke. Now, I'm a vegan. I am obviously think this research is really, really helpful. If you disagree with me, find some other research too. And I've got some previous podcasts about 2 or 3 ago where I looked at a plant-based diet compared to a meat-based diet. And I try to be as fair as I can, but I know that I am biased. So do be aware of my bias. Okay, now, when I'd read that article, I did some more research on this and found another article from the Cancer Council. The link to this is below as well. And they state that the WHO, the World Health Organization, has classified processed meats, including ham, bacon, salami, and frankfurts, as a group one carcinogen, which means a carcinogen is something that causes cancer. And they say there's strong evidence that processed meats cause cancer. It increases the risk of people developing bowel and stomach cancer. And red meat, such as beef, lamb, and pork, have been classified as group 2A carcinogen, which means it probably causes cancer. And they say that did you know that if you had cancer, maintaining a healthy diet can help prevent it from coming back. How does red and processed meat cause cancer? How does it increase the risk of cancer? There are certain chemicals in red and processed meats, both added to them, especially obviously the processed meats, and naturally occurring, that cause these foods to be carcinogenic. They're saying when a chemical in red meat called heme, HAEM, is broken down in the gut, N-nitroso chemicals are formed, and these have been found to damage the cells that line the bowel, which can lead to bowel cancer. The same chemicals also form when processed meat is digested. In addition, the nitrite and nitrate preservatives used to preserve processed meat produce these N-nitroso chemicals and can lead to bowel cancer. Finally, the article I saw this week from a climate news, from a paper I subscribe to, and the link below to that as well, but I have to be a subscriber to see the whole article. So I'm going to summarize it for you. This is the article that is 2 years to save the world. Now, the United Nations chief has said this statement and has requested this massive leap, a quantum leap in finance support to help countries speed up their plans to cut planet cooking emissions. Now, this guy is called Simon Steele, Steell. He's the United Nations Climate Secretary. He says this, I'm going to quote, "When I say we have 2 years to save the world, it begs the question, who exactly has 2 years to save the world? The answer is every person on the planet, which includes me, and it includes you." So he went on to explain why the months between now, 2024, and 2026, so I'm in April 24, are so incredibly critical. He says that our planet has experienced record-shattering heat and massive damage to economies. Extreme weather events, as we know, we've all experienced them last year. the record-breaking heat waves. I live in England, and the climate here has been so different in the last few years than ever before. He said last year was the hottest in human history, a record that could be surpassed in this year, in 2024, due to the high, all-time high emissions from burning fossil fuels. People are still doing it. Companies are still doing it. Now, the world has agreed to curb global temperature rise to 1.5 C. And he says that achieving this goal will mean cutting global emissions by 45%, 45% in the next 6 years, and reaching net zero by 2050. That's 26 years away. But we are far away from that target. We are far off course. And he says, particularly the highest polluting G20 countries responsible for the bulk of the emissions. So there is today a climate plan called the Nationally Determined Contributions. Basically, he says, in aggregate, we'll barely cut emissions at all by 2030 in 6 years' time. He does say that we have this opportunity to make greenhouse gas emissions go right down with a new generation of climate plans. But he says we need those plans right now. And this is where that quantum leap phrase comes from. There needs to be this massive change in finance. So he says it is entirely achievable. That gives us hope, doesn't it? And but he says that the funding needs to be driven by the richest countries in the world to support the developing countries. And those are the countries that are facing this disproportionate climate catastrophes. He states as well, the bit that I finished with on his article is that every day, finance ministers, CEOs, investors, and development bankers direct trillions of dollars. It is time to change the focus of the direction of where that money is going. It has to change towards a cleaner, more resilient future. Why are people so focused on where they're at, their benefits now, rather than thinking about our future generations? So, by redirecting these finances, the poorest and most vulnerable countries will benefit, as will we all. A recent Gallup survey of 130,000 people in 125 countries found that 89% of those people want stronger climate action by governments. And it finishes with this quote. He says this finally: the only surefire way to get climate at the top of the cabinet agenda is if enough people raise their voices. So my final message today is for ordinary people everywhere. Every voice matters. Yours have never been more important. Now, when I talk to my students in classes about the environmental protesters blocking the roads and everything, they are so dismissive of these people. It takes brave people like that to change people's minds, to raise awareness. And I say to them, if you agree with them or not, are you aware of what the problem is? And they say, yes. I said, well, have they not therefore done what they intended to do? They've been trying to speak out over and over, but people are not listening. So they're now having to go to more extreme forms of protest. They're not using violence against people, but then they come up with this fake news. Yeah, but they're blocking ambulances getting to hospital. I researched that. And if you research it, they never caused critical life-threatening pause, blocks to anybody. So do your research. When you hear people, yeah, but this, but that, find out for yourself. It's what I try to do. And again, if you disagree with what I'm saying, then do your research and bring that research to me. I'm open. I know, I admit that I have a bias, but give me more information and I will digest it and think about it. If you agree with me, share this podcast. Let people know about this. 2 years, 2 years to make changes, and it is possible. Okay, that is the end of this episode. What is coming up, I hear you ask. What is coming up? Okay, so I've decided to do a series on a day in the life of the keto vegan. That's me. It is going to include things like a work day. What do I eat? How do I survive being at work, not being at home? A weekend day, very different, especially if I've going out for a drink with a friend or going out for dinner or entertaining people. A hen day. Now, this weekend, I am going, oh, I can't say where. I'm going somewhere for a hen weekend. This is just in case Luke and Kingsley are actually listening to my podcast. I doubt they will before the hen do because they're going to be pretty busy packing. They've been told to be ready at home at a certain time on Friday, ready for their first hen event. So, a day in the life of the keto vegan at a hen day, an entertainment day, living somewhere else day. That's what I'm doing at the moment. Holiday, a day in the life of a keto vegan on a holiday. How does that work? Visiting Mother Day, that's an interesting one, and a wedding day as well. So, these episodes are coming up. Thank you for getting to the end of this podcast. Do follow or subscribe, and I will see you next week.